G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
But first up, we're going to go to the ACL CEO, Michelle Pearce. As seems to be the case in the recent months, so much happening politically in Australia and around the world. And it's going to be great today to get the perspective of the ACL CEO, Michelle Pearce. Michelle, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
Well, Michelle, it's always a pleasure to have you and the other ACL staff that we speak with, but so much to cover today. What is hot at the moment that you want to talk about?
Well, the groundbreaking report that's come out of the UK called the CAS Review, which has really shone a big light on all of the harms that are happening around the gender medicine that's being prescribed to children all over the world and very much entrenched in Australia too. So finally, the harm is being revealed and people all around the world are talking.
Yeah, just in case some of our listeners don't know what the CAS report is, who is CAS and what's their qualifications to write this report?
Yeah, CAS is, her name is Hilary CAS. She's a pediatrician, but she's also the head of the Royal College of Physicians. And just a bit of background on this, listeners may have heard of the Tavistock Centre, which has made headlines, but it was UK's only gender clinic. But it was always surrounded by controversy, especially so when a woman who had gone through a transition ended up suing the centre because she believed she wasn't old enough to consent to the treatment when she was 14 or 15 years old. So following that controversy, the centre was closed down. But still all over the UK, doctors were prescribing puberty-blocking medication to children. The gender affirmation model of care was starting to take root, which means you can't say anything else except affirm a child in their decision to change their gender. But the NHS was seeing that there was a lack of safeguards, lack of reporting, lack of standards. And so they commissioned Hilary CAS to actually collate the information and present a report that would really expose what's happening in this field of gender medicine. So this report was revealed last week. But in the interim, the Tavistock Centre was actually closed down a couple of years ago. And it's hugely questionable the types of medicine that's being handed out to kids and also the model of care that they're being put on as well.
Yeah, and obviously that was used as a model, wasn't it, or as a reference point for other countries like Australia to justify the decisions that are being made about gender fluidity. But just is there any indication from the British government that things are going to change now as a result of this report?
Yeah, well, as a result of the report, UK banned puberty-blocking medication for under-16s, as they should. And now Scotland has put a pause on it while they do research. Ireland has also banned puberty blockers. In the Netherlands, where this whole thing began, they're calling for fresh research into the impact of puberty blockers on adolescent physical and mental health. But unfortunately, in Australia, the health minister isn't listening, so we're doing all we can to put pressure on. He says that Australian gender clinics follow a different treatment of pathway to the UK, but we know that's actually completely false because Australia sets their guidelines on AusPath, which is called the Australian Professional Association of Transgender Health. Now, AusPath get their guidelines from WPATH, who is the Worldwide Professional Association of Transgender Health, who Hilary CAS gave them a scathing review in terms of the types of their standards of care, which Australia has copied. So all of the things that Hilary CAS has critiqued within this report are operating in Australia.
Yeah, it's just horrible. Now, when you say you're trying to talk to the health minister, what does that look like? You're sending emails? Have you tried to have a conversation face to face or a phone call? Like, what has been the response when you've reached out?
Yeah, well, we've been contacting health ministers across the nation and keeping them updated. It's not only the CAS review. There were some files leaked from the Worldwide Professional Association of Transgender Health, which revealed the incredible health damages that occur as a result of these treatments. There's been professional bodies all over the world that have been questioning these treatments. We've been keeping our health ministers and our attorney generals updated on this. We're really hopeful that through some conversations in a couple of parliaments that an inquiry will get up very soon. But other than that, we've got some petitions going. Yes, we are trying to have those conversations wherever we can.
Yeah, well, I'm just curious if the Australian State Ministers for Health or our Federal Minister for Health is actually wanting to or able to listen to what is, it's obviously common sense. I mean, and not to mention biblical common sense, that messing with the gender of a child, I would say that's child abuse. I would say to get a minor and force them into any treatment like that is actually a form of abuse. So You would think that common sense would kick in and that they would actually be like, oh, wow, there's a report now that actually proves that common sense is right and that we shouldn't be doing this. But so far, you're not aware of any state health ministers or the federal ministers actually taking on board the findings from last week?
No, there's been a couple of independent members of parliament that are sponsoring petitions to get up. In Victoria, interestingly, a detransitioner, so a girl that lived as a man for 10 years, then detransitioned back. She was very hurt, both mentally and physically, through the whole process. Praise God, she's come to a faith in Jesus Christ now. But she's actually tabled a petition and trying to get as much support, calling for an immediate stop to the use of puberty blockers. Somebody who's been through this themselves, who experienced their harm, just one voice representative of many that have gone through this harm. So we're encouraging our supporters in Victoria to get on and sign that petition.
Yeah, so if our listeners want to find these petitions that you're referring to, Michelle, where do they find them?
On our Take Action page on the ACL website, we put everything up there. But just in terms of some of the revelations that have come out of this report, there's a concern that they're over-treating children who are actually suffering from other mental health issues. So because this isn't treated as a holistic care model, it's gender affirmation model, which means if a child presents saying they want to be the other gender, you can't actually tell them anything else, that they're being rushed on this model of having this medication. And so they go from puberty blockers, then they go to cross-sex hormones, and then that leads them to surgery. And it's showing a large amount of kids that start on the puberty blockers, which they try and get them on very early because they're most successful before somebody actually starts puberty. So get them on at 11 and 12, they say. This helps suppress their puberty, so then they can go on cross-sex hormones, and then the large percentage of them actually go on to surgery as well. But also the mental health challenges in our generation, Generation Z, they're scared of climate change, addicted to their screens, there's anxiety that comes from the things that are posted online. So no wonder this generation, who's faced with a lot of these mental health challenges, embracing this phenomenon of identifying as the other gender.
Yeah, well, they're looking for an answer, aren't they? They're looking for a sense of identity. I can't remember the name of the report, but another report came out recently that said that a lot of kids that want to go through these transitions have been exposed to, serious trauma, domestic violence, abuse, emotional, physical, even sexual abuse. And so that's the key issue here. It's not that they need to change gender. It's just that they've been traumatized and they're looking for a way out. And if we give them, as a country, a way out which says, hey, change your gender, that's going to fix everything, they're going to try it, aren't they? But exactly. Like I said earlier, common sense would say it's not the answer. It's so sad, isn't it?
It's really sad. I was just travelling throughout New South Wales over the weekend, and I spoke to a doctor who says he's seen 980 teenagers who are struggling with their gender identity. And, because he sees it in terms of, okay, this child has obviously got some mental health challenges. There's things going on in their life. He can then help them to move to a place where they're comfortable with their biological sex and actually identify the root causes of the things that are happening in their lives that are driving them to be so confused about their gender. So thank God that they saw him and that he was able to provide that holistic care. But I asked him, I said, what do your colleagues do? with its gender affirmation model of care, do they then immediately have the kids on this medical pathway? And he said to me, he said, they don't know what to do. So they send them to the gender clinic. Mm. And it's at gender clinics where the affirmation model is entrenched. They don't offer holistic care. They put them straight on this pathway. So that really hit home to me. This isn't just like 10 kids, 20 kids. This guy in New South Wales says he sees 980 kids, one doctor. So you just imagine kids that are struggling in this way.
Oh, it's so sad, isn't it? It just makes me think, Michelle, we just got to keep praying for revival, haven't we? We need God to move in our nation as much as we'll fight this politically. And we're just so thankful that the ACL and other organisations like you are fighting this on the political front. We need God to move in our nation, don't we? Christians need to pray.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up to Anzac Day, and I just find it hypocritical, to be honest, all the political leaders and media personalities that will go on about Anzac Day and all these brave soldiers that died for Australia. Well, look at Australia today. Look what we're doing to our own children, not to mention abortion and this gender fluidity and the stuff we're polluting their minds with, which is causing them all this stress and anxiety about climate change. And it's a mess. We need God to move in our nation.
Absolutely. Children are suffering, and it's the image of God that's under attack. You know, in Genesis 1:27, when it says that God created male and female in his image. So if you think of the enemy's way to distort the image of God, which would be to distort the image of male and female, and that's what we're seeing here. It's a spiritual battle that we're fighting. And, you know, I take these things as ACL. It's actually an opportunity to shine the light on what the truth is. It actually presents an opportunity to share the gospel with our culture. And that's why it's great to have ACL positioned in that way, where we can speak this truth into media, to our politicians. And, you know, it's getting more and more difficult. And I was saying to one of our state directors yesterday, it's getting more and more difficult to present our truth without sharing the theological foundations, because the truth of who we are is founded in Jesus Christ and who God created us to be. So being ACL, we can be unapologetically Christian, but the science is more and more backing up what we know the truth to be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every time science discovers something, it's basically just confirming what the Bible has said for thousands of years. And I think it is time for Christians to be loud and proud. The West is obviously being populated by more and more people of an Islamic faith, and I see no fear in them to speak what they believe, to demonstrate what they believe in, and they're very loud and they're very proud. And I think it's time for Christians to stand up as well, as you said, and shine light. But just quickly, Michelle, we've also got the religious discrimination bill. What's happening with that?
Yeah, well, thankfully, Senator Michaela Cash, the Shadow Attorney General, she's received a copy of this bill, and so she's been travelling around briefing religious leaders in Sydney and in Melbourne so far. So we've just helped to coordinate those gatherings, because as we see the bill in its current form, which we haven't actually seen it, but she's taken us through it, but she's not allowed to hand it out. But it will actually be a step backwards for religious freedom. And so there needs to be a lot of negotiations with the Labor Party before anything that will actually advance religious freedoms will be presented. So we're hopeful that, because the government has said they won't put anything, you know, they won't present a bill without the coalition's agreement, that we'll be able to negotiate with the coalition, with Labor, so that before a bill is even tabled in Parliament, that it would be something that the faith leaders, that Christian schools, that ACL will actually agree with. And if it doesn't get to that place, if we actually can't agree on a bill, then it won't be tabled in Parliament. That's what we're expecting to happen. So it'll either be status quo, which isn't fantastic, but it's better than what the Labor Party are currently proposing with their draft bill.
And are you confident that the coalition will actually listen to your concerns about this bill and work with you to try and get it amended or scrapped altogether?
Yes, absolutely. They've been a lot more open than the Labor Party have in terms of listening to our concerns. They had a bill that was pretty good that was presented within the Scott Morrison government, but unfortunately didn't get through. So all that needed to be done really was some refining, a bit of tightening up on some loose ends on that bill. And so it was in a much better form. But now with what Labor are proposing, it's like there's a real ignorance in terms of what religious freedom actually is. There's an ignorance in that it's your Christian worldview that affects your whole life. It's a transformation of everything, not just who you are at school. And so the Labor Party are trying to find a way to make it okay that, you know, people who don't practice our faith, mostly in terms of their sexuality, is where the real controversy is. Well, that's their business. What they do at home doesn't matter. But as long as they don't propagate those views at school, then that should be fine. And so it's taken a lot of time just to convince leaders within the Labor Party that it's not just about who you are at school, that your Christian worldview affects all of life. And so we need to be able to hire teachers who their whole life is transformed by the gospel, not just what they say they agree to within school hours.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's a lot of understanding of Christian faith in the Australian Labor Party right now. Unofficially, I know someone who is a federal parliamentarian who goes to a Bible study group in Canberra, and he said the last Labor Party politician to attend that was Kevin Rudd, which gives us some idea there of how many Christians are around the Australian Labor Party, because Rudd's been out for a long time now. But just quickly too, Michelle, some good news here. The Queensland homeschool bill has been dropped.
Yes, that's right. And this really does show the power of grassroots activism. There was over 900 submissions, 23,000 people signed a petition asking the Queensland government to take their hands off interfering with homeschoolers. So they've dropped their plans to increase these regulations. And we know that the public school curriculum, especially on sex and relationships education, is terrible in Queensland. So any interference would have been bad for homeschoolers. So the Queensland government has said, okay, we've heard the public, we understand the concerns, and for now that they won't move forward on their plans.
Yeah, and I think this is a real win, isn't it, for people just standing up and speaking up. And obviously we've talked about this a few times in the last few weeks with ACL and different organisations, and it just shows that us Christians, we do have a voice, don't we, Michelle? If we stand up and speak up and contact MPs, things can actually change, can't they?
Absolutely. People think, oh, what's the word? What, you know, is it really worth signing a petition? Is it really worth sending that letter? Absolutely, it 100% is. Even if they don't read your email, they see the number of emails that have come in about a certain issue. Submissions are a really powerful way to get your voice heard as well. Even if it's just something very simple that you put one paragraph, it tallies up the number of people that are opposed to or for, you know, the certain piece of legislation.
Yeah, and it's a real win, because I think the numbers of Queensland kids now, several thousand now, are being homeschooled. A lot of them are Christians, and this is such a win for those families who just want to educate their kids with the basics, maths, you know, English, science, history, everything else, but also with some Christian teaching in there as well. This is such a win for the Christian families homeschooling their kids.
Absolutely. And we know that these kids often do much better in terms of their education than kids that go to schools. I've met a number of homeschoolers that have gone on to do amazing things, who think so well because they've had that solid grounding in that Christian worldview teaching.
Yeah, and their minds aren't being bombarded with unnecessary things like gender change and climate change and all the things that you said which are scaring kids today, which I personally believe are unnecessary. Like, let them debate that stuff in university and learn about it when they're over 18, but not now when they're in their early formative years. But Michelle Pearce, such a pleasure talking to you as always. We do have to move on, but we want to thank you so much for your time today, and we're looking forward to our next ACL update next Monday.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.